Albertsons and Tom Thumb gas rewards are now better than ever. Just shop at Albertsons and Tom Thumb to earn gas reward points. Redeem up to 20 cents off per gallon at participating Chevron or Texaco stations and up to $1 off at Tom Thumb stations. Sign up at Albertsons.com/rewards or TomThumb.com today. Already signed up? Sign into your Albertsons or Tom Thumb app. Maximum gas reward at participating Chevron or Texaco stations is 20 cents per gallon and $1 per gallon at Tom Thumb stations, up to 25 gallons. Other restrictions and exclusions apply. See complete details at Albertsons.com/rewards.
Hello and welcome to this very special week edition of the Backline Report. It's the Open Championship Preview Edition. You cannot miss it. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and checking on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alvader, but you know, it's the Open Championship. We need more than reinforcements. I mean, we need hometown. We need inside information from that side of the pond. And, hey, who better than the European golf guru, Kieran Clark, our friend and colleague, who's here with us again. How are you, Kieran?
I'm very well, Carlos, and like yourself, looking forward to the Open Championship. Obviously, a great highlight of the year for the game's oldest and the most, I think, many ways, most prestigious international major championship we have. It's obviously so much history to it. Obviously, a different style of golf, links golf, is a different challenge altogether, and it brings out, asks the players different questions. It's always fascinating to watch, always unpredictable, but it's always a great atmosphere and a different feel than the other majors, and it makes it very unique and very special. And Royal Birkdale is one of the best venues on the entire Open Rota. And there's so many guys, Carlos, have a chance to win this week. It's very hard to predict. And I'm looking forward to talking about it tonight with you because I love the Open. And someone's going to be the champion golfer of the year on Sunday. And I can't wait to find out.
Oh, if you think that, if you out there think we have this down, wait until we do the preview. I mean, we have like 144 players that we're going to try to see which one is going to be our top pick, but we'll see. Hey, Fred. Hi, how are you today?
Oh, man, it's Open Championship week. You know, that means Kieran's heart here. We always love to have Kieran here to talk major championship golf. Plus, we're excited. We're excited to have you back, buddy. 2 weeks off, that's a big absence for you. We've missed you, so we're glad to have you back. And, you know, this week in golf, we had the mad scientist, Bryson DeChambeau, who won in Iowa among the cornfields. Americans did not fare well at the U.S. Open. Bernhard Langer let one slip away at the senior players. Plus, did I mention it's Open Championship week? So, let's go.
Let's go. And like you said, it was a major weekend on a couple of the tours. But let's start with the big one and the LPGA. And let me say, if there was any doubt from anybody out there about why I kept on raving and declaring that Sungyeom Park was the 2017 LPGA Rookie of the Year, I hope you, all of you, put them under lock and key, throw away the key into a furnace, and make it disappear. It's a lockout. I mean, it's an even no contest. Sungyeom Park just won her first LPGA tournament at the Women's U.S. Open this past Sunday. I was watching in a sports restaurant here with a couple of friends, and I remember saying to them after she birdied 17, hey, it's over. That's it. Sealed, signed, and delivered. But then that same group who had their own favorite and all of them already washed out after we watched Sungyeom's approach shot in the par 5 18th, roll off the back of the green, leaving her ball in a swale, they started saying, I must be nervous, because even if I wasn't showing it, that looked like a terrible shot to come. And to be honest, I was a little worried. I mean, the light wind and beating sun had dried Trump National Bedminster's greens out enough to make that chip very scary, especially with the U.S. Women's Open title on the line. Think it through. If she hits it just a little long, her ball could have easily run off the green and into the pond on the other side of the putting surface. A little short, and it comes back to her feet, or worse. But Sungyeom, she listened to her caddy as he reminded her that she has done this plenty of times before, that she knew exactly what she had to do and to calm down. And in the post-tournament interview, she acknowledged that that talk with her caddy gave her the confidence to make that shot, and she remained steady. You know, her chip bounced softly on the green, rolled towards the hole, and came to rest about a foot and a half from the hole. The ensuing par putt put her at 11 under for the tournament, all but giving her the title. I mean, mathematically, it wasn't over, but because Chan Shan Fong, who had led after each of the first three rounds, would have had to hold out for eagle on the 18th to force a playoff. She birdied the day before, so it was an attainable feat. She had going for her one of the scenarios that could have helped Sung Yun. She flew her approach shot over the green to lose the eagle opportunity, then followed up by shipping her fourth short shot, her fourth shot short, and watched the ball roll nearly back to her feet. After finally getting the ball on the green, she missed her bogey putt, then suffered a lip out before getting the ball into the hole. You know, Fong then left the green with a triple bogey 8 for a 3-over 75 and a T5 finish. After just two bogeys through 71 holes, she ended the final round with a triple bogey on the 18th to lose her chances at forcing a playoff. At the beginning of the week, things did go a bit sideways for Sung Yun Park. After her first run of 73, Park was T58, 7 shots off the lead. Obviously, that first round misstep didn't prove enough to derail the number 11 player in the world. To put into context how impressive her climb off the leaderboard was, you know, the top 60 in ties makes the cut at the U.S. Women's Open. The cut ended up at being a 2-over. Had she shot 74 on the second day, she wouldn't have even played the weekend. But a second round of 70 in the rain pushed her up to T21. Her 67 on Saturday brought her name into conversations. She was alone in fourth place heading into the final round, 3 shots off Fong's lead. Though this is Park's first year on the LPGA as a member, she was in a similar position at last year's U.S. Women's Open at Cours d'Aval. She was in the final group last year, but fell off after her group was put on the clock at the turn. She finished T3rd. On Sunday at Trump National Bedminster, Park was in the second-to-last group and had even more ground to make up than she'd been faced with the year before. Fong had looked comfortable and in control over the first 3 days of play. She had made only one bogey in over the first 54 holes, so if making up those 3 shots was going to be easy for Sung Yun. But she truly made honor to one of her nicknames, which is Dak Gone, which directly translates into shut up and attack. And if you watch her stoic demeanor on the course, the nickname makes sense. She wears that brim of her hat low on her forehead, her eyes peering out, fixed and focused on the task at hand. She walks with perfect posture, her shoulders back, her spine straight. She doesn't smile a lot, doesn't talk much. She, well, shuts up and attacks. It was a valuable trade during a week that had plenty of distraction. I mean, from the rain to weather delays to all the Secret Service and fan commotion around President Trump's arrival and viewing of the tournament, it was a U.S. Women's Open that had a lot going on besides just playing golf. But this victory came sooner rather than later for her, and it's just the first of many to come. With the win, she climbs now 6 spots on the Rolex rankings all the way to number 5. Going down the rest of the field, 17-year-old Hee Jin Choi finishing solo second to win low amateur honors for the second year in a row. Hey, this girl can really play, and it's another one that we might be seeing more of soon. After she birdied 15 to get to 10 under, apparently that adrenaline made her take that tee shot on the par 3 16 too soon and maybe out of focus, and she splashed it in the water. She would birdie the 18th, but would be no threat to the winner. Well, number 1, So Yun Ryu, she continues her consistent run. She finished 3rd with fellow South Korean Min Jung Ho. Fong had company in 5th with Carlota Siganda and Young Hyun Lee. Another of my favorite players to watch, Se Young Kim, finished T8 with Amy Yang and Miriam Lee. In total, 8 South Koreans finished inside the top 10, with Fong from China and Siganda from Spain the other two. The top American finisher was Marina Alex at T11 with Min Jae Lee. Other notables, Brooke Henderson T13, Christy Kerr T19, Charlie Hall T21, Lexi Thompson, Stacey Lewis T27, Lydia Ko and Anna Nordqvist T33, Susan Pedersen, T56. And on the ones missing the cut, Danielle Kang just followed up her breakthrough win at the KPMG Women's PGA Championship with a missed cut, while Arya Yutanagan and Inbe Park joined her among the missed cuts. Michelle Wee, she retired due to a neck injury. Kieran, what is your take on the Women's U.S. Open?
Yes, and I think in the end we've all agreed that really, you know, Sonia Park, this is inevitable. She was going to win a major at some point. Her record on the LPGA Tour in Korea was outstanding the past couple of years, and obviously she's contended in majors in the past year or two. So it was only a matter of time she picked up that first title, and it was certainly the first of many. I think she's a really impressive player, very calm demeanor, and is just an impeccable talent. I was so impressed by the young amateur, Hee Jin Choi. She was just amazing, and that's what really drew my attention all weekend, was seeing her contend and if a real historic story could be made. And obviously, in recent years and in the LPGA Tour, we're seeing your winners being younger and younger. We've seen Lydia Ko, obviously, and Brooke Henderson coming onto the scene. The likes of Michelle Wee playing as a 13-year-old, and Alexi Thompson and Morgan Pressel and so on. And even, of course, recently on the Lady European Tour, a 14-year-old won a couple of weeks ago. So we're seeing, you know, young teenagers contending and winning big events on professional circuits on the female game, which seems incredible. But we shouldn't really underestimate how impressive it is for a young person like that to be in that position in a big event, a major championship, and to be there right to the end and very nearly win the event. But of course, now Sun Hyun Park, obviously tremendous in every aspect and a really impressive player. But of course, really, the main takeaway for me is the real lack of home players doing well. You know, that leaderboard is really dominated by Asia, particularly South Korea. Obviously, Carlos Saganda was up there as well for Spain, but obviously a real Asian-dominated leaderboard, which is really a sign of where, obviously, the game has been for a number of years now on the LPGA Tour, but now all these emerging players, young players coming through from South Korea, is only going to continue, and I just do not see, obviously, there's Lexi and players like that, but behind them, I just do not see that the depth of talent emerging from the US, and in many respects, Europe as well, can really combat the Korean players coming onto the circuit. I think the one kind of unfortunate thing for this event was, obviously, a great event, and it's I think it was, so much of it was distracted by, obviously, President Trump being there and the kind of circus that came with that. And also it was somewhat overshadowed by all the other events that happened around the world, like the Scottish Open or the John Deere or the senior players. So it was a shame that a big event like this didn't quite get the reception that it deserved. And I think the viewing figures in television, certainly in America, would reflect that. They're very low on Fox, which was a shame. And that's kind of been a trend recently with all the USGA events on Fox. So, yeah, in terms of the golf, Carlos, you know, Sun Hyun Park, a great talent, a great player, and I think this will be the first major of many for her.
Fred, how about your take on the Women's U.S. Open?
Well, I'm coming from a little different angle here, guys. I absolutely thought it was one of the worst women's tournaments I've ever seen. I got to see a fair amount of it over the weekend, and honest to God, I was embarrassed that, you know, this was high-level women's golf. It just was hard to watch. The course did not seem that hard to me, but evidently Bedminster is a pretty tough golf course because it was eating these guys up. First of all, the Washington Post, you know, had a whole row in the media center. They tried to make it all about politics, which really pisses me off. Second thing, Mike Davis couldn't even show up when he's right down the road at Far Hills for a presser at the U.S. Women's Open. I know he doesn't historically go to the U.S. Women's Open, but he should have made a point with all the controversy that surrounds this thing. Trump did show up. Great. It's his place. He should be able to do that. 23-year-old Sun Hyun Park, you've been talking her up, Carlos, for, what, over a year? You've loved her, and you were right on. You were spot on about that. She played the most steady. Just nothing seemed to bother her. She just was spot on. $900,000, first-place check, biggest check. You know, $5 million purse, that's really something. That amateur kid, Choi, she gives up $450,000 for remaining amateur. Wow, that'd be tough to do. But where in the world were the Americans? Not one American in the top 10. In fact, Koreans held 8 of the top 10 spots, with Shang Feng from China and Carlos Saganda from Spain holding the other two. Are they going to change the name to the Korean Open and nobody told anybody? What's the deal with that? Other big names that did not fare well. Michelle Wee had to withdraw with a sore back. You could see her play on Thursday. She could not even move. She couldn't turn. Christy Kerr fell back on the weekend, finished T19. You mentioned Alex Marino was a low American at T11. Where did she come from? I've not even heard of her. Lizette Salas was T15. Salas, Marino, and Kerr were the only three Americans in the top 20. Are you guys telling me a 17-year-old amateur from Korea is that much better than all the American women? If that's the case, they may as well move the LPGA Tour offices from Florida to over to Seoul, because I'm telling you what, they're just going to dominate for a while. The other thing is, the Kieran, you mentioned the ratings. We're only a 0.6. That's, you know, that's just ungodly. Not even a 1, okay? So the ratings were terrible. USGA may want to consider canceling the contract for Fox because they're just killing your audience. But they are getting $100 million per year, so I guess there is that. Who needs a TV audience anyway? So, but someone's going to have a rude awakening in 6 years when that big, fat Fox contract comes up for renewal. How can Fox be making any money on what they're doing with USGA stuff? The last thing here, guys, I'm going to rant for a minute. I'm absolutely sick and tired of the press blaming everything imaginable in the world on Donald Trump. One reporter insinuated that Trump was responsible for Stacey Lewis's poor play on Saturday because of the commotion overhead when a small plane ventured into protected airspace and a jet and a helicopter had to force him out. They were saying, well, it's Trump's fault that Stacey Lewis played bad. Give me a break. And then this ultraviolet group, the LPGA said they're going to enforce some of the old dress code rules they have. And so this ultraviolet group sent a thing out, a press release. Well, blame Trump for the LPGA stepping up enforcement of its dress code for the women players. They say, how could they let a sexual predator like Donald Trump dictate any type of women's dress policy? You talk about a stretch trying to tie two things together. They're completely unrelated. So, I mean, it's just, I can't believe people get paid for writing this crap. So, Carlos, that's all I have. That's my rant. I really did not enjoy watching the U.S. Women's Open. Fox is still terrible. They keep getting a little bit better, but they're still bad, okay? Joe Buck should not be doing golf. There's just no way. I mean, he's absolutely god-awful terrible. They should have given Mike Tirico any amount of money he wanted to come and run their golf thing. They just screwed up there. But anyhow, I was not happy with the U.S. Women's Open, if you guys can tell. I don't know if you can tell or not, but that's where I stand.
Well, I don't know. Kieran, do you think he didn't like it? I mean, it didn't sound like that.
I think, Carlos, apart from all the things that Fred mentioned there, I think apart from them, he thought it was okay. But obviously, he feels better now because he's got a hole up his chest. And you said, we're getting towards the Open Championship this week, so try and relax. Look forward to that. And, it wasn't the best week, but I hope you feel better. Again, Fred, you have to express your feelings, and I'm glad that you have.
You got to let it out. You got to let it out.
Exactly.
Thank you. Thank you, guys, for sharing.
Just to wrap it up, I mean, from Fred, I mean, other than the play, the transmission, the broadcasters, the course, the distractions, the fake news,
the media,
everything else,
yeah,
the media,
it was great.
Other than that,
yeah,
everything else,
it was great.
Well, Fred,
I thought you guys would like
but
that.
There was,
I should write an article about that. But.
Hey, Fred, there was also another major this weekend being played. It was on the Champions Tour, and that was the Constellation Senior Players. And Bernhard Langer won it, right? That's it. That was the deal.
He had it won up until the 71st hole. For one of the very few times in his Champions Tour career, Bernhard Langer was not able to close the deal at the Constellation Senior Players. He skied to a Sunday 73. which allowed another long putter guy, Scotty McCarron, to win. Although Longer looked every bit the guy who was well on his way to a fourth consecutive senior players, something happened on the way to the trophy ceremony. Longer made a double bogey five at the par 317, the next last hole, and failed to birdie at the last, which allowed McCarron, who fired a fire round 66, to pass Langer and collect his first major win. The 59-year-old German, who has already won two majors this year, had a one-shot lead before dropping his tee shot in the water on number 17. After taking the one-shot penalty, he missed a four-footer and had to settle for double bogey. I feel your pain. His six-footer for birdie leapt out at the last, giving McCarron the win. I've been working so hard for this. This was one of my goals this year, to win three events, and one of them being a major. So I've still got one more to go, McCarron said. Both McCarron and Longer came under fire from the Golf Channel's Brandel Chamblee last week, as he insinuated that both McCarron and Longer, who are still using long putters, are dangerously close to non-compliance with the USGA's non-anchoring rule. So, you know, if these two guys keep winning, which they have been dominating the Champions Tour the last 2 years, that outcry is going to become louder and louder, guys.
I don't know. They're looking for something just to blame. Maybe they will blame Trump for that as well. That's my take. It's Trump's fault that they're doing that, so we'll see.
You're probably right about that.
You think that Donald Trump could bring in an executive order banning long putters? He could do, I guess.
Yeah.
The RNA would not like it. They wouldn't recognize it.
Hey, Kieran, there was action in Europe. There was the Scottish Open, something that is close to you, and the Italian Challenge Open on the Challenge Tour. So you got all the information about those two, those tournaments.
Yes, I do, Carlos. And the Scottish Open, of course, has become a big Rolex Series event this year. It's always been a real kind of fantastic warm-up to the Open Championship. It tends to attract a very strong field, and it did this year with Rory McIlroy being there, Henrik Stenson, Adam Scott, guys like that. And in the end, it was Rafa Cabrera-Bello who came through and won in the end at Dundonald Links, a new venue for the Scottish Open down in the west of Scotland, very close to Troon and Turnberry. And Prestwick, the classic old open venue that's right on that wonderful stretch of coastline where it sits a wall-to-wall golf for 25 miles. It's just a wonderful part of the world. And Dundonald is one of the more modern courses in that area. And it hosted the Scottish Open there. And I see Rafa Cabrera-Bello came through and won it on Sunday. Last round shot 64, course record. Got into a playoff in the end with a young Callum Shanklin, 24-year-old, who was looking for his first win. He played great all day on Sunday, but then towards the end he hit a second shot on 18 with a one-shot lead from the par 5. It left him such a difficult shot above the bunker. And kind of the nerves when they were there, the pressure, also a tricky shot, and he couldn't. He frittered away that advantage and dropped the shot in the last, left his winning putt short, and went to the playoff where he lost after Cabrera-Bello hit just a brilliant shot into the green and two putted from there for birdie. Well, Shanklin actually ended up in a very similar place to where he was before. So a great win for Cabrera-Bello. In the end, he's been one of the most consistent players on the European Tour for the past two or three years, but he hadn't won for 5 years since he won in Dubai in 2012. It's his third win on the Tour, but that seems a really low number for a player of his unquestioned ability. As we saw last year, of course, at the Ryder Cup, where he was a real standout, playing with Sergio and one of the best players in what was obviously a disappointing Ryder Cup for Darren Clarke's European team, but he was one of the standouts. And he's been very consistent this year again. He's a very good player, has a wonderful attitude, he's very likeable, and you know, he's playing well, and you get a win here, and that's a big win on a big tournament, a huge amount of prize money, obviously, in there, a Rolex Series event, and it really sets him apart, and it, of course, it builds him up very nicely for the Open Championship this week at Royal Birkdale, where the funny thing is, since the Scottish Open started travelling around links courses around Scotland, previously it was being played at Loch Lomond, which is a parkland course, very nice place, but not a links-style course, but the past 7 years or so, it's been played in a links course. And generally speaking, Zach Johnson, who played John Deere, was the only Open champion in that time who hadn't played the Scottish the week before. Rory played the Scottish, Darren Clarke did, Ernie Els, Phil Mickelson did, and indeed Henrik Stenson last year. They all played the Scottish Open the week before winning the Open. So it's a really useful practice for guys getting into that link-style golf competitively. Obviously, this year we've also had the Irish Open last week before that as well. So the guys that have played in those events, he might have an advantage this week at Burtondale, and Rafa Cabrera Bear will certainly, with that renewed confidence, will be a player to watch out for this week. He could be a real contender because he's certainly capable. But you mentioned also the Challenge Tour, Carlos, and they were down in Italy for the Italian Challenge Open, where Joel Schoholm from Sweden, a very colourful character, kind of a large built guy, wears very elaborate clothes, and he won in the Challenge Tour for the first time, and he came through with a great round on Sunday, 65, and he won by 4 shots in the end, ahead of the former amateur champion Bradley Neal from Scotland, and indeed Chase Koepka, of course the brother of Coops, who is hoping to follow in a similar path to the US Open champion, going from the Challenge Tour to a major championship, which of course Brooks has done in the past few years. So a good one for Joel Schoholm, obviously a guy who was on the European Tour for a few years, has fallen away, now he's working his way back in, and guys like Bradley Neal and Chase Koepka who are trying to make their way in the professional game. And once again, the Challenge Tour has a tremendous variety of older players trying to re-establish themselves and younger guys trying to make their name. So Joel Schoholm is a great win for him. But Carlos, Rafa Cabrera Bello, there's a lot to admire about his game and his personality. And now he's got a big title that I think his talent certainly merits.
And you mentioned Chase Koepka, and we all know that Brooks dominated the Challenge Tour. Maybe that's why he's going there to see if he can try to replicate a little bit of what his brother did. And it was a great setting for him. I mean, he won 3 times and got moved up to the European Tour. And definitely the Challenge Tour brings a very good setting, I would say, for because it's a world tour as well. They are not only in the in Europe, so they experience a lot of different courses, settings, and all that really prepares the players really, really well for whatever is coming in the bigger tours. Hey, Fred, your guys dominated on the PGA Tour in Iowa. They're in the John Deere Classics, starting with the Mad Scientist, Bryson DeChambeau. I mean, wow, what a comeback for him. How about the John Deere Classic?
Yeah, before I get to that, Carlos, I got a couple things I want to ask Kieran about, just a couple comments about the Scottish.
Is it
really
about
like
Donald
Rafa.
Trump?
No more Trump. No,
I'm
no
not
more rant.
Answering any Donald Trump questions.
The rant is over. I got to see Rafa Cabrera a few years ago at the Masters, actually, on a practice day, and I was taken by his game back then. It's very elegant. I really like how that guy plays. I think he could be a star as he gains more and more confidence. Just giving confidence, I think he could be a real star. a couple things too. I don't know if you guys saw this, but Ryan Fox, the guy who got his entry into the Open last week, pulled a tee shot on a par 3 into a dune, okay? I mean, it was way left. It was like off the world left. He hit a provisional, and he holed it, okay, for a par. It was a hole-in-one, but with a lost ball and a penalty. So that was great. I don't know if you guys saw that or not, but it was absolutely outstanding. And then, Kieran, I'd like to get your thoughts real briefly. You know, we're, about halfway through this Rolex series now? You know, we're just coming off the French, the Irish, and the Scottish. The fields look like they're pretty good. I think that thing is working pretty good. I think it's working like Keith Pelley wanted to do. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the combination of the prize money and the points, but also the venues, has really helped. You know, Port Stewart and Ireland is a fantastic venue. The Open de France at the Golf National, where the Veritas will be next year, is one of the best golf courses in continental Europe. And, of course, this week having the Scottish Open before the Open is also a great place in the calendar. So I think they've boosted already very good events and made them even stronger. The events already had very good fields. So in the end, it's very good for the top players, and these events have obviously benefited from having the big prize money and the big status. But then again, the rest of the European Tour is still as it was, still struggling, still struggling for attention. So there's almost two European Tours. There's a European Tour that Rory plays and Henrik Stenson plays, the big events, the majors, WGCs, and then these Rolex events. And then there's a European Tour that the other guys play, and that's not so good. So on one hand, it's done very well, and I think it's done exactly what Keith Kelly would have wanted to do. But I think the issues for the European Tour run deeper than this as well. So I think it's very good surface, but it's no more than that.
Very good. Thank you. Yeah, Carlos, the John Deere Classic, it's every year the week before the Open Championship. It's turned into pretty much a web.com tour event. Guys that are way down the list trying to get that last exemption into the Open Championship and jump on the free shuttle that flies over right from Iowa every year. Well, this year, the much ballyhooed mad scientist, one-length club Bryson DeChambeau, he began Sunday four shots behind the leader, Patrick Rogers, who's another guy that we've loved and we've watched, and we're glad to see him back fighting through all his injuries. So, but DeChambeau turned it on the back nine on Sunday. He had six birdies, including two on the final two holes, to fire a final round 65, which avoided a playoff with Rogers and get his first PGA Tour win. So he's got the two-year exemption. He's got the big check. He's flying to Manchester. And so, you know, he's waking up and going, I'm definitely not in Iowa anymore, Toto. Patrick Rogers, you know, he's still looking for his first PGA Tour win. He had such a phenomenal summer season as an amateur a few years ago. Well, what did he win, like $700,000 an amateur, and he didn't take any of it? And then he went through all these injuries and problems, and he's been fighting his way back. So he had the thing in control, posted the final round, one or par 70, but DeChambeau just made too many birdies down to the end. Another rookie who's been playing well this season and already has a win, as you mentioned, Carlos, Wes Bryan. I like this kid a lot. Finished in third. Daniel Berger made another big jump, shooting a low round. Jumped up the leaderboard on Saturday. He could only manage a 70 on Sunday, so he finished T5. Also at T5, another couple of familiar names. You might recognize these guys, Steve Stricker and Zach Johnson. I think between them, they have like four titles there at the John Deere Classic or something. I'm sorry. The big news, of course, is who was not at the John Deere Classic, and that list included some, well, pretty much everyone. Even Jordan Spieth declined this year. You know, he got his first ever PGA win in 2013 and followed up with the second title in 2015. He decided to skip the jet over to England and prepare for the Open. So, as always, not a great field of John Deere. Doesn't matter. John Deere seems to love it. They support the tournament there in Iowa. They're happy to have it. DeChambeau, it's nice to see him fulfilling some of the promise that had kind of been projected for him, winning the NCAA and the Open, the U.S. Amateur in the same year a couple years ago. So, you know, God, he'll probably even more insufferable talking about technical stuff. So, oh, well. Back to you, Carlos.
Yeah, definitely, Bryson DeChambeau. It's good to see him. Finally, he's getting to form. I mean, he's been having top 20s in the past 2 weeks before this win, so he's definitely peaking at the right time for the Open. So that's a guy that, like you said, it's been a lot expected from him. So who knows? Maybe, you know, this is the thing that will make him give it that confidence finally and go all the way to the top. But we'll see. There's a long way to go, but that's a guy that we have to be looking for. Hey, there was action on the web.com tour, and with four birdies in the back nine of the fourth round, American Bryce Garnett won the web.com tour's Utah Championship on Sunday at Farmington's Oak Ridge Country Club. Despite bogeys on the sixth and 14th holes, the 33-year-old from Missouri birdied on eight holes to finish the fourth round six under par, bringing him to 21 under for the tournament. Mexico's Abraham Anser and Americans Austin Cook and Rob Oppenheim tied for second with 20 under to win the tournament. Anser birdied on 10 holes on Sunday to finish the fourth round 8 under par and move up 28 spots on the leaderboard. In the fourth round, Cook finished 6 under and Oppenheim finished 2 under. South African golfer Jax Blue fired a 10 under on Saturday to tie with Oppenheim for the first after three rounds, but Blue slipped down the leaderboard on Sunday, finishing 19 under for the tournament to tie for fifth place with Americans Nate Lashley, Blake Adams, and Denny McCarthy, and Canadian Ben Silverman. You know, Garnett now has played two seasons on the PGA Tour, but he lost his status in 2015 and had toiled on the Web.com Tour for the past two seasons. But thanks to this victory on Sunday, he will almost certainly be headed back to the PGA Tour next year. With his victory and the $126,000 first prize, the second largest on the Web.com Tour, he moved from 57th on the money list to number 12 with $182,142 earnings on the year. The top 25 money winners on the year get promotions to the PGA Tour. Kieran, you're going to close it up. How did the ladies fare on the Legends Tour's Senior LPGA Championship?
Yes, Carlos, the first ever Senior LPGA Championship this year played at the Pete Dye Course in French Lick, Indiana, which is an event now for players of a minimum age of 45, as you say. Not 25, that's a very young figure. On the LPGA Tour these days, 25 is quite old, isn't it? So, yes, 45, these players are eligible to play on the Legends Tour, and this obviously Senior LPGA Championship. And Trish Johnson from England, who's been a real formidable player for many years in the LET, really since the early 90s, she's won so many events on the Ladies European Tour and some indeed on the LPGA Tour. She was a real stalwart in Solheim Cup for Europe for 17 years or so. She was really there every year from the inaugural event back in the early 90s. And she won in the end by three shots from Michelle Redmond, who of course is a LPGA Tour winner in her own right as well, and is actually the women's golf coach at the University of Minnesota these days as well. So she's played on the Legends Tour in the past and won some events there as well, and a very capable player in her own right. She finished second, of course. So, but Trish Johnson, you're a player who still plays very well in the LET. You know, she's very capable. She's 51 years of age now. She's still a very gifted player, and actually won an event only 3 years ago in the European Tour. She won the Scottish Open 3 years ago, which we'll play actually this year in a couple of weeks at Dundonald, where they had the Scottish Open last week. And of course the ladies are building up towards the Women's Open at King's Barnes in a few weeks' time. But in terms of the older women at this event, you know, Trish Johnson, you know, one of the real standout names on that list. You know, she has a great playing record, but she's still a very good player to this day. And Carlos, she certainly displayed that over the 3 rounds that she played, with some really excellent scoring, a great first round of 67, then 72, 73, but she, and still in the end, was very comfortable and over quite a difficult and typically kind of tricky Pete Dye golf course.
Fred, anything you want to add before we go to the par 5 news?
No, they just, the French Lick area, built that up. Yeah. Now, the French Lick people have been looking so forward to that event and promoting it so hard, and I'm really happy they got it done. It turned out great, I thought. That's a really hard golf course, guys. You know, it's hard for those women to play. But, you know, they got her done. So, and the wind didn't even blow like it normally blows up there on top of that hill. So, but, yeah, hats off to the people at French Lick for getting this thing done and the LPGA.
And with that, we'll wrap up our weekend backspin. Now we have our par 5 news, which are, we're going to go a bogey. We're going to do a par 5. We're going to do a par 6 because, you know, it's Open Championship. I mean, we have to talk about a lot of things. And, Fred, you're going to talk to us in the tee shot about the USGA rapidly advancing to a world handicap system. Is it really happening?
Yeah, they're working on it. You know how I like to pick on the USGA, and I think this is another one of their big ados about nothing, but they're spending a bunch of money on it, and they're cutting off a bunch of money to local state associations, golf associations, that count on their little piece of the big pie every year. The USGA has been somewhat quietly going to every amateur golf association in each state and making them spend thousands of dollars to update their systems to get on board with the latest handicapping and golf software created by the USGA to make the most accurate handicapping system in the world. I guess this is a big problem. I don't know. I've not seen it. But I know some people complain about when they play in amateur tournaments, how did this guy get in? He shoots. But that's going to happen every time. Somebody's going to shoot it lights out and blow his handicap. So, well, not all of the local, when they start pulling their money from the local and state associations, or they tell them they got to spend a bunch of money to stay in the game, you know, they just don't have it to spend, and they're not real thrilled as you can manage. So they have been able to be the keeper of handicaps for years and charge for that. And now the USGA comes in and says, well, you got to pay us. And they have to spend a bunch of money to meet your standards or lose their handicapping rights. And it's a problem, guys. It is a problem. And the USGA is kind of strong-arming this. The smaller women's amateur groups have especially been hit hard, with many just simply packing it in. It is sad that these are smaller groups losing their viability, but keeping tabs of over 15 million golfers in over 80 countries is a massive undertaking, and the USGA has used a big chunk of their $100 million every year from Fox to create software systems to track players' handicaps to make them as accurate as possible. It would have been nice if they could have spread some of that largesse around to local and state affiliations, but no. They decided it was much better to create a huge computer network and spend it on that. You know, my question is that really necessary? Well, Steve Edmondson, head of the handicap for the USGA, said, who you got to imagine, this is a guy looking to move up and take Mike Davis' job sometime, the development of a world golf handicapping system will clearly be transformative for our game, as it impacts golf at every level. You know, he's talking focus groups, online surveys, and more administrators, and that sounds like more like a bloated bureaucracy to me. I'm not sure why this has become such a big deal for the USGA, except for the fact it gives them more control over the game, which is what they really seem to want. As you know, Big Brother knows best for everyone. You know, I've had a handicap for years and never had a problem establishing one or maintaining it or keeping it current under the old system. So when you have a bunch of money in your pocket and you can gain control, I guess you take advantage of that. So, you know, that's my take on the world amateur handicap, the USGA handicap system, guys. I just, it looks to me like a power grab to me.
Well, Fred, you got to understand. I mean, players like you, it's easy to keep their handicap, but players like Kieran and I, we have to be constantly re-rated and make sure that our handicap is properly. But pros like you, it's not the same thing. You got to understand that.
Yeah. Guys, you go play. When you're done, you pay the $25 a year. You go punch your score in the thing. Or if you play away, you go on the computer. You got your login number. You put in your rounds where you're away. And voila, they send you a new handicap rating every month. It's pretty simple the way it is right now.
Okay. We don't want another rant. We don't want another rant. Hey, Kieran.
Yes.
Surprise! I mean, Chubby and Westy split up. I mean, first we had a friendly
breakup. Oh, no!
And Lefty, and now this? Come on, Kieran, tell us about that.
I know, I can't believe it. You know, it was really, you know, the Phil and Bowen thing was shocking enough that I think that even Westy leaving Chubby Chandler and leaving international sports management where he'd been for 24 years, really the entirety of his career, to walk away from them at really this stage of his career where he's still a very good player and very capable, but he's not obviously one of the top marquee names in the game. His career sort of winding down as he enters his mid-40s, but it was a real kind of shockwave. It was really shocking because the two have been inseparable for a couple of decades. Weston was one of Chubby's first clients, along with Darren Clark, and they were a real big stable together, had a lot of success, and it was a real shock. And Wes is now going to join at IMG, who, of course, are a huge organization, can offer all kinds of things, and perhaps it's more of an appealing offer to him than the ISM, where, of course, he was actually apparently a shareholder, and so it's a huge blow to Chubby Chandler and his organization, because to lose someone of Wes's stature, such a marquee name within that bracket for so many years, it was something. And you know, given the fact that they have a very good friendship, or they seem to have one for many years, Dunhill Links, they played together every year. Chubby, who's an ex-professional golfer, an ex-European Tour winner, they played together as an amateur and professional partner in the Dunhill every year here in St Andrews, and they were a good partnership. But this, you know, as to what exactly happened and transpired, we're still not sure, and they're both keeping very quiet about it. Allegedly, it's some sort of legal dispute between Westwood and ISM. Whether that's true or not, we don't know, and what the specifics are, we don't know as of yet. But, of course, players have left Chubby Chandler in the past. You know, Rory McIlroy is perhaps the best-known one. A few years ago, he went off and after winning the US Open, and that was a big shock there. And Rory sort of thought Chubby was trying to push his career in a direction he didn't want it to be. But Chubby Chandler remains still a very influential figure within European golf, particularly. A lot of young players, when they emerge from college in America or come through the amateur ranks in Europe, they're signed up very quickly by Chubby. And some of those deals may be, on the face of it, look good, but maybe in small print, there's some things that maybe in the long run are perhaps not so beneficial to the player. Because in the end, IFM, of course, wants to get the benefit from the player as well as the other way around. So it was interesting that it happened, and it seemed unlikely to ever happen that they'd break up, but it has. And as to what's happened, you're not too sure. It might never come out. But yeah, it was a really interesting story, Carlos, and one that I didn't expect. And it really came out of left field, as these things sometimes do. And we'll see. West has had a lot of changes in his life in recent years. Obviously, he's got divorced, and he's now living in Scotland. He obviously went over with his family originally to Florida. Didn't work out from there. He came back to the UK. His ex-wife now lives in Scotland as well, where she's from, with the kids. And West now lives with his new partner in Edinburgh, the capital of Scotland. So he's changed a lot in his life in the past 2 or 3 years, and now he's changing his management. So it just shows you, now, West, he's in his 40s now. He's changing things, I think, for the rest of his career. He wants things to be on his own terms. And his mind clearly feels that working with ING is the way to go for that. But it was certainly shocking. And I must quickly say, Carlos, that Fred is in a really feisty mood tonight. It's really something to behold. I'm sitting here just stunned at some of the things that Fred's saying. He's he's in a very bad mood tonight, I've got to say.
I got more coming yet. I'm saving some up. I got more for you, Kieran. You guys might think I'm in a bad mood. I'm not. I'm just telling it like it is tonight.
Oh, man.
Yes, he's in a very forthright mood tonight, yes.
After Carlos tells about the Teacher of the Year, I got some good words about that, too.
Let me tell you, Kieran, I mean, I remember in 2003 when Bernard Langer and the man who stood by his side for 22 years, Scottie Pete Coleman, parted after the Open, precisely. I mean, that was really the toughest thing that I said. It's never going to happen. Now this happened, well, yeah, but... You know, we've seen others like Tom Watson, Bruce Edwards, Sandy Lyle, and Dave Musgrove. So, yeah, nothing is meant to be forever, apparently, in golf. But, hey, Darrell Kessner and David Ledbetter headlined the 2017 PGA of America National Award recipients. Darrell Kessner, which is the PGA, who is the PGA and is the director of golf at Deepdale Golf Club in Manhasset, New York, has been named the 64th recipient of the PGA Golf Professional of the Year Award. In winning the highest annual honor given to a PGA of America professional, Kessner now heads the 2017 PGA National Award class for qualities of leadership, strong moral character, and substantial record of service to the PGA and the game of golf. And David Ledbetter, another PGA, owner of the Ledbetter Academy. I mean, with more than 30 worldwide locations, was named the 2017 PGA Teacher of the Year Award recipient for his outstanding services as a golf teacher, innovator, and coach. I can imagine Lydia Ko right now saying, what? I mean, what? What?
Say what again? I dare you. I double dare you. Say what one more time.
Man, a sequel. I'm sorry. I won't say it again. I promise, at least for now. But for the record, you all know that we had argued that he is a great coach. He was just not the right fit for Lydia Ko. I mean, for example, upon hearing his former coach and lifelong friend, David Ledbetter, had just been announced the PGA of America's Teacher of the Year, Hall of Fame golfer Nick Price's reaction was as honest as it was succinct. Hasn't he won this before? Well, Nick, no, the answer is no. Despite working with more world-class golfers than perhaps anyone in the history of the game, including Price, Nick Faldo, Ernie Els, Lydia Ko, Michelle Wee, despite building a golf school empire that spans the globe and includes more than 30 academies, despite a teaching career that has covered 5 decades and 8 instruction books, Ledbetter had been passed over by the PGA of America until now. Ledbetter is now 65 years old and will be honored on November 1st at the PGA's annual meeting in Texas. He says he had all but given up on receiving the award, but a couple of influential friends in the PGA's teaching ranks, namely Cameron McCormick and Mike Adams, helped convince the organization that its highest honor for instructors would be even more significant to future recipients if David's name was associated with it. And to think, if not for missing a 10-foot birdie putt in the 1976 European Tour qualifying tournament, one that would have given Ledbetter full-time playing privileges on that tour, golf might have been denied one of its greatest teachers and advocates. So what began with a $10 lesson to a woman at the Chapman Golf Club in Zimbabwe about 47 years ago has now grown into a resume that includes working with pros who have amassed 24 major championships on the PGA, LPGA, and Champions Tours. Stops along the way for Ledbetter include Chicago, where many noted teachers gravitated to learn from instruction guru John Jacobs, to a long stint at the Greenleaf Golf and Tennis Resort in Haines City, which used to play host to the PGA Tour's annual qualifying tournament. Ledbetter is now headquartered at Championscape, which is a resort outside of Orlando, and his current students include Rafa Cabrera Bello, which just won this past week, by Benny Ann and Ernie Els on the PGA Tour, and Daniel Kang on the LPGA Tour, who just a week ago won her first major on the LPGA. While there's evidence of a somewhat steady ascension to Ledbetter's career, it really didn't take off until the early 1980s when he began working with Price and Faldo. Price joined him first after seeing the amazing impact Ledbetter had on Dennis Watson's swing. Watson was a childhood friend of Ledbetter and Price in Southern Africa, where the three lived and played junior golf. Won three times on the PGA Tour in 1984. But then came Faldo in 1985, and that's when Ledbetter's notoriety really ramped up. That work helped Faldo win five majors from 1987 to 1993. During the same period, Price won three majors, and Ledbetter went from golf instructor to a rock star. Ledbetter founded the first specialist junior golf academy in 1993 and can be credited with the development of some of the world's top junior players. The author of several books and a regular contributor to Golf Digest, where he is annually rated as one of the best teachers in America, Ledbetter has been recognized with various awards and accolades on the global stage, including World Golf Teachers Hall of Fame in 2007 and as an Asia Golf Awards Global Golf Legend in 2016. Fred, it might not have been a good fit for Lydia Ko. I mean, nobody's perfect, but there's really no denying David Ledbetter's resume, and this is a long overdue award, so congratulations to him.
I disagree, Carlos. I beg to disagree.
Man, what's
David
going on
better? David Ledbetter is all about David Ledbetter. You know, he's getting $45,000 from each one of those Academy students every year. And I'm not too sure. You mentioned earlier that Lydia Ko fans are going to agree with this choice. He's got her stroke screwed up. I don't know if you watched her this week. I mean, her swing is so out of sync. She's throwing her hips, and, I mean, she is completely off kilter. I don't know who's going to get her back, but she is so messed up. You know what? I do agree, though. David Ledbetter is undoubtedly a hell of a teacher. He knows more about the golf swing than probably just about anybody, but this whole thing just looks like a promotion for the PGA of America to me. It's not really about promoting the game at the grassroots level. It's about promoting the PGA, and you said it. These guys convinced Bavakwa and these guys in the head shed at Palm Beach there that this will look good. We're having David's name up here. This will be good. Well, I think it's a joke. I'm telling you what, we got a guy right here in Michigan, just up the road from where I'm at right now, Mike Fay, who knows as much about a golf swing as anybody in the world, and he does it because he just loves it. He will work with anybody. You don't have to give him $45,000. If you are there and you ask him, he'll come out in the range and work with you. You know what? These are the guys that should be winning this award. David Ledbetter doesn't need this. So that's my take on that, Carlos.
Okay, I respect it. is your take this? That's it. I mean, no. But really, honestly, I do. We have said that, and you know that last year, I was saying that he was killing Lydia Coastway in her style.
He absolutely did.
Definitely. I mean, there are fits and there are no fits, and he wasn't a fit for Lydia, but. Hey, yeah, I admit it, and that's why I mentioned that it was Cameron McCormick and Mike Adams, the ones that got this going. And, of course, this is a promotion. He doesn't need it. Like you said, he has all those accolades, and he would have kept going and being the same David Ledbetter. I mean, there's this thing called it's called Ledbetter Time. You know that he doesn't get anywhere on time. He always is late, and they call it that's because it's Ledbetter Time. It's always about him. You said it. It's always about him. But definitely, I don't know, Kieran, if you have a take on that or you want to express anything about David Ledbetter.
No, not really. All I would say is I think Fred raised a very good point to trying to the awards really should go to the big main instructors, the guys who work with everybody. And I think that those are the people we should try and support and try and raise awareness of them, like Mike saying, and people like them who are the real golf instructors. You know, David Ledbetter and Butch Harmon, they're not really, they're not a level, they don't need anything like this. You know, the other guys do. I think Fred's right there, and supporting those guys would be a very good thing.
Totally agree. Hey, Fred, come on. Okay, just calm down now. A little bit. And tell us about Johnny Miller.
I'm done ranting now, guys. So I'm over.
I knew better than to assign Johnny Miller to Kieran. Then he would have ranted about this one. So I assigned to you.
Well, you know, many thought this may have been Johnny Miller's last hurrah as lead announcer for NBC's golf coverage, but alas, it is not. Whether you love him or hate him, he's always controversial. He's never had a problem of letting everyone know when every professional golfer makes a stupid mistake. Like, we can't see that for ourselves. He's been doing it for 28 years, and television viewers haven't heard the last of Johnny Miller just quite yet. Miller even thought this might be his final year. You know, and he thought, well, I'll just spend more time with my 23 grandkids. But he changed his mind real quick about that. I want to get back in the booth and spend time with 23 grandkids. But he made the announcement Monday that he will do at least another year. For Miller, it will be a homecoming of sorts, as Royal Birkdale is the site of his 1976 Open Championship, and I'm sure Kieran's going to talk about that in a little bit, win over 19-year-old Seve Ballesteros and the Golden Bear Jack Nicklaus from Columbus, Ohio. I wasn't sure if it was going to be the last year or whether I'd do a couple more, but I'm doing the Open next year also. I'm having a little bit of the battle of what my priorities are. I have a lot of things to pass on to my grandkids, whether it's fishing or being a grandpa. On the other hand, my brain is still working pretty good. That's kind of like mine, Johnny. Most days it's kind of working pretty good. Some other days, not so much. All these years of announcing, I feel like I haven't slipped any, and NBC seems to like having me around. I'm surprised that there aren't some guys waiting in the wings. It's been a good run, and I'll continue for whatever. Miller signed a 3-year extension through 2017. Billy had an option for next year. Things looked bad at NBC when Fox outbid them for that huge USGA contract a couple years ago. But now we have Joe Buck. Oh, boy. When I think of Joe Buck, I have a better appreciation of Johnny Miller. Thank you. So NBC was able to pick up the Open, so that was a positive, and that has helped fill the void of losing the U.S. Open. And Johnny went on to say, not everybody loves the way I announce, I know that, but they know it's rare these days for someone to say what they think, and that's sort of where I've come from. Just talking on the phone, you get what I think. I'm not afraid to hurt someone's feelings. Johnny staying at NBC, guys, for one more year.
So, Kieran, what do you think before you talk to us about Hootie Johnson?
Well, I must say, I Fred is actually reminding me an awful lot of Johnny Miller this evening. They're very similar tonight. They're just saying what they're saying, but off the cuff, there's no filter to what he's saying. I have to say, I quite enjoy Johnny Miller. I know a lot of people don't, but I like anybody that says what they think and actually says something. There's so many people on television now, in golf particularly, who they speak very well, but they don't actually say anything meaningful. So the guys who have opinions, maybe controversial, maybe could express them better. So I quite like Johnny Miller. I quite like Brandon Chamblee because they say something interesting. You may not always agree with it. It might be controversial, but it creates a discussion. And I think in the end, that is what golf analysts should do. But in terms of the future, I think Johnny Miller obviously has a great affinity with Burt Dale. But in the end, when he finally retired, I think the guy to replace him, in my view, on NBC should be David Duval, who I think is a great golf analyst. That'd be my opinion there. But yeah, Johnny Miller, you know, long may he continue, because I enjoy anybody who annoys people on Twitter. I love it. I love watching people shout. Great fun. So, Johnny, keep it going. I love you, really. But yes, you mentioned there, Carlos, about Fifi Johnson, who, of course, was the former Augusta National chairman who passed away the other day at the age of 86. And he had a great impact at Augusta National Golf Club and the Masters Tournament. He was the chairman there from 1998 to 2006. And many kind of significant events happened around the golf club and the tournament at that time. He oversaw major changes to the golf course, really the tiger proofing, extending the golf course, putting in trees on 11 and a few other things I wouldn't necessarily be in favour of. But he did that to try and update the golf course to fit kind of the modern technology and so on. And I think, you know, in many respects he probably succeeded in that. It was certainly a very significant thing to do, a very bold thing to try and do. And he also made a lot of changes to the qualification criteria, making the event more open for international players and so on, which is certainly a very welcome thing. I think the Masters has benefited from that in the years that have followed. But of course, he'll probably be best known for the rather ugly public row with Martha Burke over the all-male membership at the time at Augusta National. She was the head of the National Council of Women's Organization. She was the chairwoman of that organization in America, and she was very vocal, calling the Augusta National sexist, and people should boycott the tournament and boycott the golf club. And it went on for months. It was a really big story around 2002-2003, and Hughie Johnson was there in public, and maybe he's could have expressed himself better at times of how he dealt with that issue, but he was kind of facing the heat off the press and so on, and he sort of fought back. And it's a shame, because from what you hear about Hughie Johnson from people who knew him, or his career in business and banking, and also his kind of personal views, was he's actually a very interesting man. He actually had very kind of socially progressive views, certainly civil rights within South Carolina, where he was from, and various other issues. So he's actually a very progressive character that perhaps his image at the golf club didn't necessarily present. So he's a very interesting man, and he actually recommended Darla Moore, who became one of the first female members of Augusta National a few years ago, as being one of the first members. They worked together in business for many years. He was essentially her mentor in many aspects in that part of the world. So Hickey Johnson, you know, had a legacy at Augusta National. When you're a chairman of that golf club, obviously it's a very prestigious title within golf, makes you a very powerful figure within golf, and he made some very interesting changes, not always successful, but I think perhaps a misunderstood man. Though I have to say, talking about television people, I always enjoyed watching Hootie Johnson do the Butler Cabin ceremony. I have to say, I don't think being on television was necessarily his most comfortable environment, and some of his exchanges with Jim Nantz, who of course is so smooth, it's ridiculous, were quite amusing actually to hear them. So Hootie Johnson obviously a very long and successful life, and of course I'm sure will be sadly missed by the members at Augusta National. But yeah, quite a legacy within the game of golf, Carlos.
Totally, he will totally be missed, and he was a character among characters, and we express our condolences to his family on his passing. Hey, to wrap it up on the par 5 news, which today is a par 6, we made a bogey here, but it's because ESPN asked 49 LPGA Tour players 9 questions that they answered anonymously earlier this year. And their response elicited some intriguing replies about varying topics in women's golf. Some queries had yes or no answers, while others required deeper thought. In one case, they looked for one rule they would change, and some pros came back with how they were simply too many stupid rules to choose from. I have to agree with that. But anyway, so here's how many, but not all, LPGA players feel about the state of their tour, how to fix it, and even President Donald Trump's impact on the sport. And the first question was, what is the biggest issue facing the LPGA Tour right now? Not surprisingly, 35% of the players said the pay cap. I'm sorry. Fred, you got me now, the cough to me.
Between the LPGA I gave it to you.
And the PGA Tour. Yeah, it was, I don't know, it transmitted through the electronic waves.
You LPGA choked Tour up just thinking PGA. About the LPGA?
Yeah, I choked up. It's the biggest issue facing the women's game. For example, the total purse at the men's U.S. Open in June was $12 million, while this past weekend's U.S. Women's Open is just $5 million, which happens to be a record, by the way, on the women's side. So nearly 20% of the players thought getting more viewership and overall media coverage was the key to their cost. 12% said their schedule, which often bounces from east coast to west coast, not to mention entire swings through other continents, is the bigger issue. The other one, true or false, it hurts the LPGA that it doesn't have a stronger footprint in the United States. More than half said true, yet 18% said it both hurts and helps the LPGA Tour. And one of the players said that it's huge in other countries because the countries and their companies get behind women's golf and they do a great job of marketing and making players look like superstars, but that is not done in the U.S., and that's why you see less enthusiasm around women's golf. Have to agree with that. Next question was, name the best female player in the game right now, and you can't pick yourself. Lexi Thompson, Adia Yatanar, and Soyeon Ryu and Lydia Ko were the top names among their peers, accounting for 85% of the votes. And the question was asked over May and June of this year, and Lexi Thompson got the 30%, Adia Yatanar and 23%, Soyeon Ryu 16%, and Lydia Ko 16%. And one of the players said, you know, that when Lexi Thompson's game is on, she's so tough to beat because she hits it so much longer than everybody else. When you hit that long and straight, it's tough to compete with her. Another question, yes or no, LPGA Tour players, as compared to PGA Tour players, are paid fairly. With 78% saying no, more players dodged the question entirely. I mean, 78% said no, 12% say no answer, and 8% said yes. So that was a tricky one, but definitely they're not paid the same, and there's going to be a gap for quite a while until the, like in the previous question, until that enthusiasm and that fandom grows, at least here in the States. That's not going to happen. Yes or no, there should be more of a working connection between the LPGA and PGA Tour. A whopping 92% said yes. While both tours announced a strategic partnership in recent years, how might they do it? One player had a few suggestions. You know, several players chose not to discuss the topic. 8% say no, but the rest of them say 92% say yes. One of them said, I don't know if the PGA Tour guys would do a joint event because I don't think they care enough about us. Just the lifestyles, they fly charter everywhere, they rent out houses, they have chefs traveling everywhere with them, and it's the same game. This happens in sports, business. It's a hot-button topic of gender wage gap. Another one said that when given the choice between turning on men's and women's golf, people turn on men's, so don't let them compete. Have a women's tournament on Monday through Wednesday so you can watch women on some days and the men on the other. When you're directly competing, it's hard, but then people could be like, oh, the women are playing today. Let's turn it on and see what's going on. Now, this question. This one is for Fred. How would you grade President Trump's impact on women's golf? A through F. Even though ESPN said the question was about Trump's effect on golf and not about politics, 33% of the players still wouldn't comment. Some didn't want to comment for political reasons. Others simply said that they didn't know how much about his effect on the women's game, while others say they weren't American and preferred not to go there. Of those that did give him a grade from the overall pool of 49 pros, 27% marked him as A- or above, 33% no answer, 55% was the highest one with a B or above. So one of the players said, whether you like his political views or not, he's done a lot for the game of golf, and you don't really get that, especially on the women's side. It's pretty cool that we're playing at his course, and the purse is so high for us, it should be a great event. And the final question, would you ever consider not playing in the U.S. Women's Open because it's being held at Trump National in Bedminster, New Jersey? Not a single player said she would skip the U.S. Women's Open. The reasons were varied from a tournament is a tournament and he's our president to you've got to try and keep politics out of sport to others who thought it might affect some players but not them. 97%
they had a $5 million dollar purse, Carlos. Those ladies would have played in a parking lot or a cow pasture for a piece of $5 million. They don't care whose name's on it. Just cut the check when I finish well.
Well, one of them said, honestly, if you're going not to play because it's at a Trump's course, that's just being petty because we're not there to see him. We're there for a golf course for the tournament. It doesn't matter who owns it. It never mattered before, so I wouldn't ever pull out of because he's the owner of the course, and I think that would be rare. It's the U.S. Women's Open. It's a major, and it's on a beautiful course. And, there were two more questions. If there is one rule in golf that you could change by fiat, what would it be? Free relief from fairway divots got the 35%. Fixing spike marks on greens got the 23%. And the one that I would have picked, that was TV idiots calling in rules violation. I'm sorry, TV viewers calling in rules violation. I got 10%.
You had it right.
I'm sorry. I misread there. But the final one. This is the final one. Should Lexi Thompson have been penalized for the rules infraction at the A&A Inspiration this year? A total of 80% of players responding said Thompson deserved at least a two-shot penalty, but only 10% overall thought that the four-shot penalty she received was appropriate. Had Thompson not been penalized, being penalized only two shots, she would have won the 2017 A&A Inspiration instead of losing in a playoff. Fred, any final comments before we go for what everyone is expecting, which is a massive wall-to-wall preview of the Open?
No, I've ranted enough. The LPGA is not going to get on par with the PGA Tour money-wise until they get their TV ratings up. A 0.6 is not going to get it done, okay? The USGA bumped them up to $5 million. Yeah, they paid $12 million for the men, but you got to show some results. You know, you got to give them a reason to pay you more, and it just ain't there. And Carlos, the LPGA is in Toledo this week, and I'm not going to be there for a couple of days. I'm going to be down here later this week, but I can't wait to get there. But I'm telling you what, if you look down the field there, there's some ladies who are playing on the Legends Tour playing at Toledo because they're having trouble getting a field. And that's true of other events around the country. They started having this problem a couple years ago. We noticed it at the Manulife where they had to get a bunch of local college kids to fill out that tournament. They're kind of a victim of their own success. They're playing more tournaments, but the top women don't have to play all these things. They're wanting to pick and choose and take some time off. So, it's going to be more difficult. I'm kind of curious to what Michael Wan's going to do. Actually, that's got to be one of his big issues going forward. So that's all I'm going to say about that, Carlos.
Kieran, any final thoughts on the Bar 5 News or anything you want to say before we go to the major, the Open?
Yes, the Open. But my one thought would be actually going forward, I think, Carlos, on this show, you should actually dedicate a section to the show. You have the Bar 5 News and all the rest of it, but I think you can have a section of the show that's just Fred rants, just 15 minutes of Fred talking about anything he wants to, not just golf, just anything, and let him go.
You know, I was a guest on another radio show a few weeks ago, and they wanted to talk about some travel, and then we do this thing where we invite our guests to just rant on anything. And they said, you can just give us 5 minutes on whatever you want to talk. So I ranted on the USGA for 5 minutes. It felt good. I can always rant about the USGA.
With that, we'll wrap up our Par 5 News. We had a bogey. We did a par 6 today. But, hey, now it's time for what you were waiting for, our massive wall-to-wall preview of the Open Championship finally, it is the major we have been waiting for. It's the Open Championship. The golfing world has descended on Roger Birkdale in Southport for this week for the 146th Open Championship. And anticipation is building as Henrik Stenson prepares to defend his title against a sweet, strong field. I mean, who can forget that incredible victory by Henrik last year at Royal Troon, where he dueled with Phil Mickelson and took home the Claret Jug? Last year's Open Championship at Royal Troon witnessed one of the game's greatest ever final showdowns, featuring Phil Mickelson and Henrik Stenson. Between them, they recorded 14 birdies and an eagle on the Sunday, with Stenson coming out on top after posting a phenomenal 63. Stenson's 20-under par total was a tournament record. If we see anything comparable this year, the fans of Birkdale and around the world will be in for a real treat. The weather forecast looks uncertain at this stage, but it appears likely that rain will be a factor at some stage. Thursday currently should be clear, but Friday, Saturday, and Sunday could be damp. And Kieran, you're going to talk to us about the tournament history and some info on Roger Birkdale, but I have to add first that, you know, this will be the 10th time that the Open Championship has been held over the links at Roger Birkdale. And, you know, that course features a number of recognizable holes, and it has an outstanding finish. I mean, I can't wait to see on Sunday those final two. The last two are par fives for amateurs, with that 17th with its long green, the scene where Patty Harrington's famous five-wood shot in 2008, then the 18th, which is a par four for the tournament, with out of bounds lurking right at the selection of treacherous bunkers to negotiate en route to the green in front of a striking Art Deco clubhouse. I mean, the course looks to be playing well, Kieran, and the players have been commenting on the fairness of the links, so I think it's going to provide for an amazing finish on Sunday. What's your take on the history and some info on Roger Birkdale?
Yes, Carlos. Royal Birkdale is kind of widely regarded as being the best of the open roofed courses in England. Obviously, you have Royal Living and Royal St George's and Royal Liverpool there as well. But Birkdale seems to be widely regarded as being the best of them. You mentioned the word there, fair. And what the players mean by that is there aren't too many funny bounces you get on the fairways. The fairways at Birkdale are quite flat, certainly compared to a golf course like Royal St George's, where you hit the middle of the fairway and the ball kick left or right towards the rough and the bunker. So really at Royal Birkdale, when you hit a good shot, you tend to get rewarded for it. A little bit like Muirfield in Scotland, so that's why the players tend to like those two courses compared to the other ones. And like you said, it's hosting the Open this year for the 10th time. Peter Thompson was the first player to win the Open at Birkdale back in 1954. He did so again, winning for a fifth time in 1965. Actually, Peter Thompson's record is astounding. You know, people will say the Open Championship was not particularly strong in the 50s, but that said, Peter Thompson had to beat what he faced, and his record for 20 years was astonishing. Between 1951 and 1971, he finished in the top 10 18 times, and he won five championships. And I think Peter Thompson, for that reason, is quite possibly the most underappreciated great player in the history of golf, and a great player and a great architect and a great writer as well. And his two wins at Birkdale do stand out. Of course, Arnold Palmer also won there in 1961 when he actually had redemption, having lost the Open the previous year at St Andrews. He went back to Birkdale the next year, and he won the Open there in great fashion. And of course, he won it again the following year in 1962 at Troon. And this year there'll be all the grandstands at Troon, at Birkdale will have Arnold Palmer's name on them, as we will have Roberto Di Vincenzo, the other former Open champion from 1967 who died this year. So those two great players, those great legends, will have their names immortalised at Birkdale this week, which is a very nice touch indeed. But going on, Lee Trevino won 1971 at Birkdale, then Johnny Miller, as Fred mentioned earlier, saw off Seve Ballesteros, a youthful Seve, and Johnny Miller's great ball striking route came through that day, and Seve was a little bit all over the place, wasn't quite defined, and made some mistakes in that costume there, and Johnny Miller came through and won that during what was an incredible run of golf for Johnny Miller. You know, from 74 to 76, he was probably the best player in the world, and that win at Birkdale was a real highlight for him. And then in 83, Tom Watson won there, obviously the greatest Open champion of the modern era, It was Glasgow's own title indeed in 1983, and the only one he won out with Scotland. Actually, Tom Watson is in the UK this week. He was up in the Highlands of Scotland today. He was playing Brora and Royal Darnock, two of my favourite golf courses, and he's enjoying the lovely sunshine we're having here at the moment. And then into the 1990s, Ian Baker Finch from Australia, he putted just unbelievably and put together two of the finest weekend rounds in open history, 64 and 66, to win that championship. Of course, Ian Baker Finch's career took a very dramatic turn for the worse after that point, and his game really done from 2 or 3 years after having won the Open, unfortunately. And of course, he's now a very successful broadcaster for CBS. And then in 1998, Mark O'Meara came through and won against a kind of unheralded Brian Watts in a playoff. O'Meara was 41, the Masters champion, and he won the second major of the year that year, and ahead of Tiger Woods, who had a great run, had pulled a 30-foot putt in the last and came so close to winning the Open that year for the first time. And Justin Rose, as a 17-year-old amateur, finishing the top four, was another great finish there. And Justin, of course, will be going back this year, 19 years on. And Mark O'Meara, who's now 60 years of age, this is the last year he's eligible to play in the Open Championship, and he'll be hitting the first tee shot on Thursday morning for his last Open, which is a very nice touch. And to finish his Open career at the venue he won it on, and that seems a very appropriate thing. And like you said, there, Carlos, 9 years ago, Parry Carrington, without a practice round that year, he was actually injured, came through without any practice, and he won the Open with an amazing final finish in the last few holes, and a great eagle, and he saw Ian Poulter and Greg Norman, who rolled back the years at the age of 53 in some really, really difficult conditions. The winning score that year was +3. The wind was up and the course was playing as hard as it really can. So yes, Royal Birkdale is a really good golf course, Carlos, one of the best in the world to widely respected all the players, and this week it's been in great condition. Today, Tuesday, and yesterday, Monday and Sunday, we had just impeccable weather at Birkdale, just stunning weather, absolute perfection. But as you say, the weather's to turn as the week progresses. Tomorrow and Wednesday to be thunderstorms potentially, so maybe not so much practice tomorrow. Thursday should be okay, but then the winds to pick up a little bit over the weekend and a chance of rain. We're talking to a colleague of mine who's at Birkdale this week. According to him, you know, the golf course is playing quite soft, actually, and playing very fair. So, in his mind, if the wind isn't too high, then the scoring should be very good, and some of the longer hitters should really benefit there. But, of course, the conditions in the Open are always crucial. If the wind picks up, then it can change things altogether. But it shouldn't quite get to the level that it was 9 years ago. So, Carl, I expect it to be a really solid championship, a really fair one. A really solid player is going to have to come through and win here, because it's a really difficult golf course. Again, one where you play well, good play will be rewarded, and I think the players enjoy that fact. And, you know, it's had a great list of champions through the years, Carl. I think we can expect probably another very good name to lift the crown at Jordan on Sunday.
And I know, you know, this course is surrounded by towering dunes. Those fairways there at Royal Birkdale, the wind between those impressive sand hills is impressive. I mean, it's a course that will test even the most accomplished Lynx players to their limit, especially when the wind is gusting. And I think the 17th hole, even though it was the easiest ranked in 2008, and it's a par 5 that generally plays downwind, so it tends to be reachable in two, especially for all these bombers that we have now on tour. It's going to be something that to watch, because I think a lot of players will try to get some risk reward on it, and especially that Sunday is going to be worth watching. Hey, Fred, who's in and who's out? I mean, who are the players? Give us an overview of the field this year at the Open.
Yeah, I'm just going to break it down here a little bit, but provided that he avoids any pre-tournament accident or Paulina doesn't hit him upside the head with a shovel or something, Dustin Johnson is a favorite to win the 2017 Open Championship, according to Vegas Insider, at 12-1. DJ, of course, who missed the Masters, is currently the favorite. Even though he has not been that impressive since he returned after his injury from the fall down the steps, the 33-year-old has also been the favorite to win the other two majors, and he missed the cut at the U.S. Open after withdrawing from the Masters. Making his debut near the top of the charts at a major is John Rahm. Everybody loves John Rahm right now. The 22-year-old Spaniard, has two professional wins on his resume, one on the European Tour, one on the PGA Tour. Evidently, nobody got too worried about his T59 finish at the Open. And so John Rahm is third favorite. I guess he's second. He's tied with Spieth and Fowler at 14-1. You know, we keep looking at Ricky Fowler every time we bring his name up as one of the favorites, especially over here in Europe. We think he can play length courses, and then we just get disappointed. So hopefully, nobody's pulling for Ricky Fowler more than me, and I'll talk more about that later. But, he needs to get one of these things. I mean, it's time. So maybe this is the year. Rory McIlroy, you remember him. He used to be able to play a little bit. He's tied with your buddy Sergio at 16-1. Justin Rose, 18-1. Hideki Matsuyama, 22-1. Jason Day, 25-1. Well, Jason Day, Henrik, Tommy Fleetwood, they're all at 25-1. So, and again, I'll talk about that a little bit later. Other familiar names, Phil Mickelson, 33-1. Can Phil repeat the great rounds that he had last year? Guys that we like, Thomas Peters, 50-1. Justin Thomas, 50-1. a guy I keep thinking that should do well in this thing, Matt Kuchar. And, you know, the guy that's been playing well of late that also is due to win one of these things is Ian Poulter, and they're both at 50-1. So that's just some of the bigger names that are in the field, Carlos. I know we're going to talk about these guys in more detail later. We had a couple guys. We had Ben Curtis who pulled out, and Tony Finau got his place. Where do I have it? I moved it down my notes or something. Here we go. 2003 Champion Golfer of the Year from Powell, Ohio, by the way. I didn't know if you knew that. And just north of Columbus. Ben Curtis withdrew from the Open Championship, replaced by Tony Finau. Finau is 26. He's one of the more exciting players on tour thanks to his long driving ability. Averages 308, and he's an aggressive player. He's first in total birdies on the tour. So he's had five top tens, earned almost $2 million, so he's playing very well this year. And then the other one that withdrew late, Scott Piercy has not been doing well. He's missed like about five cuts in a row. He's playing bad. I don't know if he's injured or what. He decided not to travel to England just to miss another cut. So Anirban Lahiri from India will take his spot. When we last saw Lahiri, he was runner-up at the Memorial in Columbus, Ohio. And he will be making his fifth start in the Open. He was T30 at St. Andrews in 2015. And it just seems like every time we see Lahiri in one of these big tournaments, he plays pretty well. So would that be a story if he got in as an alternate and won a claret jug? And also somebody from India winning a major like that? That would be gigantic. So I'll leave the rest of the comments till later, Carlos. That was just kind of a quick overview.
Yes, and some of the featured pairings, we are going to see Jordan Spieth, Siwoo Kim, and Henrik Stenson. Sergio Garcia is paired with Jason Day and Zach Johnson. Hideki Matsuyama is going to be with Brooks Koepka and Tommy Fleetwood. Ricky Fowler with Paul Casey and Adam Scott. Dustin Johnson will be with Charles Schwartzel and Rory McIlroy. Justin Thomas there with Justin Rose and Louis Oosthuizen. Some of the other big names that you would like to see in a great great pairing also. John Rahm would be with Patrick Reed and Lee Westwood. Also, Phil Mickelson is going to be there with Mark Leishman and Francisco Molinari. Bryson DeChambeau is an interesting pairing there with Jason Downer and Brendan Grace. Also, another interesting one is Russell Knox with Alex Noren and Ian Poulter. Rafa Cabrera Bello is there with Scott Hahn and Bubba Watson. So those are some of the interesting pairings that we're going to see this weekend. They're in the Open, at least the first two rounds. And now we're going to talk about the top 10 and in the official World Golf rankings and their preview of what are their chances. And Kieran, you have the first four, DJ, Hideki, Jordan, and Rory.
Yes, Carlos, I have the top four. And, of course, starting with Dustin Johnson, who is the bookmaker's favorite. But then again, it's very hard to tell because some bookmakers are actually having three, four guys tied at the top. right now, it seems a case of the no one really knows who's the favourite here, because so many of the guys perhaps aren't quite on form, or perhaps don't have the experience, or it's not quite there. And obviously the Open has always kind of intangibles of the weather and conditions and so on. It's really, really hard to predict. It seems a cliche, but it is the most open of Opens that I think we've seen for a long time. But DJ is number one in the world, and rightly so, of course, had a great year after winning the US Open last year, carried it obviously on to the rest of that season, and obviously was dominant, so dominant in the first quarter of this year, really until, obviously, nothing could stop him until he met a flight of stairs, of course, at Augusta National, and that, you know, and really since then, as Fred said, Dustin hasn't really been in form. He hasn't played much, he hasn't done well when he has played, so he's not the player he was back in March, and who knows, it obviously has gained, he's so capable, he's such a tremendous player, he has all the tools to, you know, succeed on any golf course. He's played well in the Open in the past, in tough conditions. As you'll remember, back in 2011 at Royal St. George's, when he should have beaten Darren Clarke, and he hit the ball out of bounds, and he was the 13th hole in the back nine, and that cost him there. And, you know, Dustin, he can play well on any golf course. He has, the driving is incredible. His wedge game is so much better than it used to be. And he's a capable putter now as well. So Dustin has all the tools, but does he have the form? And that's the question. And but you never know. If anyone can turn it on and play well, he's certainly capable of that. And under pressure, as he showed last year at the US Open, in those circumstances, to come through and win that championship, he can handle the pressure. Well, it's because he doesn't think about it too much. He's not the most cerebral character. But either way, he's got ice-cool veins under pressure. And you know, if he was to get in contention, you'd not be too surprised. But again, doesn't quite have the form. So there's a lot of questions for Dustin to answer over the first couple of days this week. And Hideki Matsuyama, you know, a guy who, of course, you love, Carlos, and he played really well at the end of last year. Into this year, he won in Phoenix as well. But then it kind of tailed off a little bit, didn't quite have the form, seemed to be struggling with the swing. Then the US Open, really out of nowhere, he came right through there and finished second, of course, behind Brooks Koepka. So Hideki is back in there. He's world number two now. Obviously, if he's to win an Open, he'll lose the most international major. It would be an incredible thing for golf, having a Japanese star win a big championship like that. Certainly, you know, he's capable in so many aspects. His game's very good. But then, and he's put on most in the past, of course, as well. He finished highly at Muirfield a few years ago when he was a very young player back then. So Hideki's been around for a while now. He's still only 26, but can he cross the line in a major? I'm not sure this will be the week, but you know, I would not be surprised to see him get in contention, because he played in Ireland 2 weeks ago. So he's acclimatised himself now to Lynx golf. He spent some time in the UK. He's adjusted to the time zone and his fellow golf and the way the ball reacts and so on. So he's pretty much set to go on Thursday of the Open. And then Jordan Spieth, I think, is probably the most exceptional name from this list of the guys I have, because he's obviously won his last event at the Travelers and that amazing finish when he holds the bunker shot and just dramatic stuff. And Jordan, according to my source, Bennett Burtville this week, Jordan's hitting the ball really, really well so far. So that bodes well for him. And obviously Jordan's really improved his iron play this year. He's up there in the stats on the PGA Tour. We all know what he can do when he gets going on the greens. In the end, and I think most of all, he has this kind of intangible ability to do the right thing at certain moments, to either hold the putt or hold the bunker shot or just do something magical when he has to. And only the great players really have that quality. And that separates him from everybody else. And he has a real grittiness to his game. So whether with the turn foul, obviously, that really bodes well there. I think players like him, with a very good all-round game, will play well at Burton. So I think Jordan's probably the best, the most likely winner out of the top four this week. And the final guy in the top four is kind of been forgotten about, as such as Rory McIlroy, because he hasn't really given us much in the way of positive stuff to shout about, because it's been a really strange year. Obviously, equipment changes this year, TaylorMade, big money. Then, of course, he got married. He had a recurring injury problem, of course, it causes a very restrictive schedule early in the year, affected his preparation for the Masters and the US Open. He missed the cut at the US Open. But he's also missed the cut now at the Irish Open that he hosted, and also the Scottish Open last week. So Rory is coming into the Open with really no form. He's putting together, you know, 9 holes of good golf and 9 holes of bad golf. There's no consistency there to his game right now. And even though he has an amazing talent, an amazing ability, he's an incredible player, you just can't really see him coming, putting it all together this week, because There's really no sign of it coming. And in the end, you know, Lindskov hasn't always been his favorite form of the game. He prefers to play more American-style golf. You know, I think Quail Hollow for the PGA is going to be the one for him this year. He's won twice at the Open. He really is capable. You know, he can do anything on a golf course. We've seen it so often over the years, but I just don't think this will be the week. I think, you know, he keeps saying that he's getting close and close, but we're not seeing results just yet, and I think it's probably too soon. Given the way he's played recently, for really to come through and win the Open, but if he's come through and make the cut and finish in the top 10, you wouldn't be surprised, and that's probably quite a good result for him building towards the PGA. So Carlos, you know, top four guys, there's question marks there, not always positive ones. For me, I think Jordan is the standout name. I think he could have a really good run at the Claret Jug this week.
I got the 5, 6, and 7 that Sergio Garcia, Jason Day, and John Rahm. Sergio, well, he will fancy his chances. I mean, he finished 2016 in 13th place in the world rankings, and he's up to number 5. He has proved himself as a fine links player over the years with 10 top 10 finishes in the Open, and following his victory in this year's Masters, he should be full of confidence that he can get his hands on the Claret Jug, especially showing how in form he is. He's coming off a T2 finish at the BMW International Open, and he's definitely one of the ones to watch and one of the favorites. Jason Day, the number 6 in the world, he won 3 titles in Stellar last year, 2016, but was replaced by Dustin Johnson at the top of the rankings in February and has since slipped to 6th in the world. He's now 29 years old. He missed a cut at the U.S. Open last month and also failed the weekend at the Travelers Championship last time out. So he has been troubled by injuries over the years and some problems off the course. And you have to wonder that he may not be firing on all cylinders due to issues with his body and his mind right now. But he's a player that knows how to play this type of course. And now that nobody's expecting him to win, he could be very dangerous. All it takes for him is just a little bit here and there of good shots to get a little confidence going, and that could spark a winning run for him. And number 7, John Rahm, I'll talk a little bit about him a little bit later on, but he was a brilliant six-shot winner of the Dubai Duty-Free Irish Open on the links at Port Stewart 2 weeks ago, but he isn't going to be shooting 24 under at Rory Birkdale. I mean, Harrington carded three over to triumph in 2008, and 7 of the other 8 Opens held there were won in single digits under par. That said, Rahm is doing some amazing things this season, and his breakthrough PGA Tour victory also came on the coast at Torrey Pines. It's worth noting that he turned pro just before last year's Open at Royal Troon, where he made the cut at and finished T59. Fred, you have Henrik Stenson, Alex Noren, and Ricky Fowler.
Yeah, even though Henrik Stenson is a defending champion at the Open, he is ranked 10th by the bettors. He has not had much going this season. In 9 starts, he's had 5 missed cuts, only 2 top 10 finishes. He's number 99 in the FedEx Cup. So, I mean, this is kind of what we've seen from the big Swede in the past. He has a great year, then takes the next couple years off. And, you know, he just isn't working hard. He doesn't, you know, grind as much. So I think that's what we're seeing. I don't think we're going to see him repeat. Another Swede that is going in the opposite direction, Alex Noren, is number 9 in the official world golf rating. Number 5 in the race to Dubai. He's won the 2017 BMW PGA Championship in May. You know, can 2 different Swedes win the Open Championship in consecutive years? I know, Carlos, you love this guy, and you know, did you know that since September of last year, he has 3 wins on the European Tour? And then, I mentioned it earlier, you know, we always have such high expectations for Ricky Fowler and always seem to be a little disappointed. It's hard to win a professional event. It's harder still to win a major. Ricky has been in position many times. He does have 1 win, a runner-up, 2/3, and 7 top 10s in his 14 starts. So he has a very good year going. Is this the year? He's number 6 in the FedEx Cup. As we mentioned, number 10 in the official world golf ranking. And one of the favorites on just about every list that you look at or everyone that you talk to. So, you know, maybe it's Ricky's time. I don't know. I'm always pulling for Jordan Spieth. You know, you guys know that. But I hope Ricky can jump up and win one of these things too.
So now let's talk about which we consider are the dark horses to look at. And Kieran, which are yours?
Yeah, I think it's kind of hard to see who the dark horse is. I think in the end, there's so many guys who are capable of winning this week. There's not really, we've seen very experienced players in the Open in recent years, and obviously younger guys out there as well and very talented. So it's very wide open, and no pun intended, of course. But I think, kind of, I look for sort of sentimental stories, and I think Corey Harrington would be a wonderful story if he used to come through and run again here. I'm not sure he will do, but I would not be surprised if he contended at some point over the weekend. I think his game is trending in the right direction. He has this really unusual pirouetted swing, which makes logical sense when he explains it. He's played well for the most part at the Scottish Open, apart from like, the third round. He had a really bad round in the bad weather, but he came back in the next game, had a great last round. So Porrig loves links golf. He plays it, he loves it, he embraces it. It's his favourite style of the game. He's coming back to a venue, of course, that he played well at before. Obviously, he's older and experienced, and he still has some problems with his putting at times, but, you know, Porrig, he has that experience, and I would not be surprised if he was in the top 10 at worst on Sunday. I think he's still capable of contending in this major. But elsewhere, I think even another guy that's sort of rolling back the years is Ian Poulter, who I think he's had a remarkable sort of turnaround in his season after looking like his career was kind of disappearing early in the year. He's came back second to the Players' Championship. He played well last week for the most part. He qualified for the Open through the actual qualifying series, so he really wanted to get into this week, and he finished second at Birkdale back in 2008. So I think Poulter obviously had a big following behind him, and he's a colourful character. Love or hate him, he's always interesting, and I think it'd be a hell of a story if he used to come through and pick up a major at this really late stage of his career. And kind of a lesser thinking player would actually be, how about the Beef? Imagine if Andrew Johnston came through and won the Open. It might not be likely, but I tell you what, he would be a more popular winner on the Open, and he played well last year at Shun, and he's put together three good rounds, didn't quite have the last round there, but I'd love to see the Beef play well this weekend. So I'm picking my names, Carlos, more for the sentimental reason more than anything else.
I don't know why they're all from that area there that you live. I don't know if that had anything to do with it. But yeah. Hey, Fred,
come on, Carlos.
How about your
dark horse? I never pick any Americans. Come on.
No, of course. How would you? Fred, what are your dark horses?
Well, you know, we remember who dueled down the stretch last year, Troon, Phil and Stenson. You remember who was third last year? J.B. Holmes, long hitting, low ball. Does that kind of a game fit Royal Birkdale? Kieran was telling us that long hitters could do well. The golf course is a little softer. The ball rolls out a little bit straighter. Long hitters could have an advantage. You know, maybe it's time for J.B. to win a major. And then a kid I just love. I like to watch him. He's exciting. Daniel Berger. He does not let conditions or the course or anything else get to him. He just plays golf and tries to make as many birdies as he can make. Now, I'm not sure that's the formula to play well in an Open Championship, but if he gets it going, he is a beast, so, and he's definitely long. And then, I hate to do this, but I have to kind of agree with my good buddy there, Kieran. Ian Poulter, I really think he's playing more with a sense of purpose. I think losing his card and having to grind a little bit to get that back and then thinking he lost it but then got it back in the end here in the United States, I think that kind of lit a fire under him. I think he's playing golf. He's not worrying swing. He is a free thinker anyhow, more like an artist. So, you know, let the artist loose and actually win a major at the Open. That would be a great story. Ian Poulter finally getting his major. I've never really been a big Ian Poulter fan, but he is really playing well of late. So it would be kind of nice to see him get that done.
Well, for my part, my first pick might not be kind of a dark horse, but he definitely, I cannot leave him out, and that's Tommy Fleetwood. I mean, I have been high on this guy all year, and I'm not letting my guard down again. And with him, the only doubt hanging over him this week is whether he can handle the expectations. Pressure has built as a result of a stellar season that he has enjoyed to date. However, everything we have witnessed in recent weeks suggests the local favorite is more than up to the task. I mean, in January, you might remember he held off Dustin Johnson to win the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship, and he hasn't looked back since. He finished fourth at the U.S. Open, putting in the kind of performance that demonstrated a new level had been reached. And he has enjoyed a superb season, and earlier this month was a winner in the recent French Open. He followed that up with a tie for 10th in the Irish Open and will receive a great local support this week. So, got to go with him. Rafa Cabrera Bello, last week's winner at Dundonald. He has a great tee-to-green game and will look to continue that superb play. He showed in a closing 64 there in Ayrshire on Sunday, and he's definitely one of the guys on the rise. I cannot stop and mention Thomas Peters. I mean, he made his Open debut 12 months ago at Royal Troon and impressed. He's made a significant jump since a T4 on his Masters debut and shows just what is possible from him. He's been mixing cuts, missed cuts, and top 15 since, and perhaps there are more suitable Open venues than this. Maybe St. Andrews is an obvious first thought, but Peters has the talent and belief to put on another big show. And those are my three. I just want to throw out these two names, and that is out of the clouds. Brian Harman, who is among the biggest surprises of this season with a huge year to date. He has five top tens in his last 8 starts, including a win and a T2 in the U.S. Open. Watch out for him. And Fred, you mentioned this guy a little while ago about the holding three, and that's Ryan Fox. I mean, he has a great form. He comes from a T6 in the Open de France, a T4 at both the Irish Open and the Scottish Opens. He looked right at home on the links and perfectly comfortable with seeing his name on the leaderboard in among strong fields, so I look forward to a good exit from him. Now, our picks to win, Kieran, which are yours?
Well, it's such an impossible task, Carlos, I've got to say, because I can really pick about 25, 30 names here, because it's really hard to say. But I'm going to kind of stick with sort of what I said earlier. I think Jordan Spieth, I think, you know, going on my tip about how well he's hitting the ball, and given the qualities of his game, I think Jordan, he came so close to St. Andrews 2 years ago, I think Jordan's kind of building up again to actually reclaiming his position as the number one player in the game. I think he's building up towards the form that he showed a couple of years ago. He hasn't quite done it yet, but I think it's coming, and it may happen here at Royal Birkdale. And then I'm going to go for Sergio. I think Sergio, for me, I picked Sergio to win this event at the start of the year. He loves the Open, seems more relaxed here than any other event. He plays well in it almost every year. But now, of course, he's the Masters champion. He has that weight off his shoulders. He can play it almost with freedom. He has a major under his belt. And I think Sergio, he loves the Open. He embraces the challenge of it. And I think he feels really comfortable here. And this golf course should be perfect for him. It's a ball striker golf course, and there are a few better than Sergio Garcia. And my final name is, you know, I'm not sure he's quite got it in him to win, but I like redemption stories. And I remember what happened 5 years ago nearby here at Lytham when Adam Scott collapsed in the last few holes and Ernie Els came through and won. I'd love to see Adam Scott win an Open Championship. I think his talent deserves one, it merits one. His putting isn't always there, but I think he has a decent make in the greens. I think his game is perfect for Birkdale, perfect for the Open, and he's quietly coming into some sort of form of play. He had a good final round at Dundonald in the Scottish Open, so I think Adam Scott could come through and be a contender at the weekend. So, but I think for me, you know, Jordan Spieth and Sergio, I think those two for me are the standout names right now.
Fred, how about your picks to win?
Yeah, I'm going to keep these kind of short. I've just stayed very close to the odds makers. Ricky Fowler, Matt Kuchar, and Dustin Johnson. But you know I'm always pulling for Jordan Spieth. I want to see him do well. So if I had to pick, you know, just a couple guys, Fowler, Kuchar, and DJ. But I really think Spieth is going to be there also.
All right. Well, mine, I think there's no surprise about the three that I'm going to say. I mean, the first one, for Marc Humer in 1998, won the first major at Masters before coming to Birkdale 3 months later and adding another. So, Sergio Garcia in 2017. But, you know, he's a changed man for so long. He was that guy who should have had a major to his name but didn't. It was 73 and counting before he arrived in August and April. Undoubtedly, this fact played on his mind. But now that the monkey's off his back, being the case, he's a very dangerous player. He's happy, relaxed, and focused. He's got history with golf's oldest major. No, not all of it is good, but hey, he has 10 top 10s there. So why his chances wouldn't be any different this year? Well, you know, he has come also close in the Open, and I have to agree with Kieran. At the beginning of the year, we were thinking Sergio would win his first year, and he has all the necessary skills for that. John Rahm, he continues to impress. He's been talked about as one of the pre-tournament favorites in only his fifth major, speaks volumes about his rapid rise in the game. His victory at this year's Irish Open was extraordinary, and it would be surprised to see him contending come Sunday at Royal Birkdale. There remains a question mark over his temperament, although he spoke in length with the press today about the positive work he's been doing with his mental coach, Joseba del Carmen. He was also quick to talk about the importance of finding the fairways after enjoying a practice round with Jordan Spieth, Phil Mickelson, and Justin Thomas. I mean, if he can do that, there seems to be very few faults with the rest of his game at his present. And again, that convincing performance on his victory in the Irish Open at Port Stewart show he has the skills to cope with what is Lynx golf. And finally, hey, Hideki Matsuyama, I believe the first time major winner streak will stretch to 8 when the world number 2 Hideki Matsuyama hoist the clad at Yacht. I mean, he strengthened his irons, maybe better served for Parkland style tracks, but he can flight it well in the wind. Further, the Open tends to have the most manageable greens, and if he can putt serviceably, he will be in the mix. His problem early in the year was that for some reason, he changed his putting swing. I cannot understand why, but now that he's back to that previous form of swing that he had in his putting stroke, oh, wow, he was tied for second in the U.S. Open and kept up the good play with a decent showing in the Irish Open when he finished T14 2 weeks ago and T18 and T16 already in the 2015 and 2013 Open Championships, respectively. It looks as solid as anybody else's resume here. So, Fred, any final words on the Open before we move on?
No, just the fact that, of course, it's on NBC and Golf Channel. If you want to see the TV and Internet times, you can go to golfchannel.com, news, golf, central blog. Everything is there. Basically, it'll be the live coverage will be on Golf Channel on Thursday and Friday mornings, beginning early, like at 1 a.m., down to about 4 p.m. So, yes, that's 14 hours of live coverage. And then NBC is picking up the live coverage on the weekend, basically from 7 to 3 on Saturday and then 7 to 2 on Sunday. And then if you want to watch the live streaming on your computer, just go to golfchannel.com anytime, and you can start watching it there. So if you want to see it, there are places to watch it. Just go to your computer, go to Golf Channel, or watch it on TV, or set it on your DVR or something.
Kieran, any final words on the Open before we move on?
Yes, Carlos, it's obviously a wonderful week of the year. My favorite of the golfing calendar, the Open Championship, the game's oldest and, I think, greatest championship, most international championship, and the one that has the most history to it. I think it's always special and always unpredictable. We'll kind of round up through the years. Anything can happen. There's so many great stories. Wouldn't it be wonderful if Tommy Fleetwood, the hometown boy, came through with a huge crowd behind him, record ticket sales. He came through and won this week in front of the home fans. It'd be unbelievable. But, of course, whatever happens, somebody's dream will come true and someone will become the champion golfer of the year. And, Carlos, I can't wait to find out.
I can definitely not wait either. I mean, I still think those last two holes are going to be incredible, and there's something special is going to happen this Sunday in that finish. And with that, we wrap up our wall-to-wall massive Open Championship preview. Hope you enjoyed it and can't wait to see this Open Championship this weekend. Now let's move on to our final pods. I'll be quick here to go now. You know, this one, I'm sure that Fred loves it. Consider the caddy, you know, an iconic sports world figure. The modern age has largely left behind. Just ask any looper who has shown up for work at daybreak only to wait for hours without landing a bag. Well, a few years ago, Dave Cavalsa and Jake Ward, a pair of tech-savvy golf buffs living in the mid-Atlantic region, looked at this time-worn system and decided it was ripe to be disrupted. In comes Looper, launched in the mid-Atlantic back in 2015. It's available at more than 100 courses in California, Florida, Maryland, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Virginia, with broad expansion plans in the works. Like I said before, in the old business model, caddies would show up in the morning and wait to be chosen for a round, an efficient use of time and one that might prove fruitless if not enough caddy-wanting golfers showed up that day. Now, caddies can schedule their work and waste less time. Labor laws can complicate matters for courses wanting to classify caddies as independent contractors rather than employees as well. But Looper, you know, it's a great service. It recruits, certifies, and orients schedules and pays all the caddies who make anywhere from $25 to $80 per round before tip. The company derives revenue from a booking fee, thereby the courses where it operates aren't charged a dime. And final, my final part today, according to an Associated Press report, the venue in University Place, Washington, Chambers Bay, will soon begin a transition from fine fescue greens to putting surfaces that are composed entirely of Poa annua grass. Poa annua greens are prevalent in the Pacific Northwest, including at nearby Sahali, because of the climate, but Chambers Bay opted for fescue when it opened in 2007. An unseasonably warm stretch leading up to its debut as a major host site allowed the invasive Poa annua to thrive, and what players encountered 2 years ago were pockmarked putting surfaces that looked something like vegetables, likened to vegetable ranging from broccoli to cauliflower. But this transition will take several years and will include maintenance staff simply allowing the grass to overtake the fescue naturally. So this is not something that's going to be now, but this is something looking forward to see if they can land either a U.S. Women's Open or maybe another U.S. Open, because right now future venues are currently finalized through 2026. So you don't know. Mike Davis has hinted at Erin Hills that a tried and true venue would be announced for 2027 in the coming months. That could be one. Kieran, I believe you have something on Jordan Spieth and former PGA Tour player Chris Riley.
I do. I've got to say that I think it's a little bit late for Chambers Bay to try and sort out its greens, I've got to say, after what we saw 2 years ago. That was quite ugly in so many aspects. But yes, Jordan Spieth, of course, won the Open, the U.S. Open at Chambers Bay. He's going to go back down under this November to go and play in the Australian Open that he won last year and also won in 2014 at the Australian, where it will be this year again. And, of course, Spieth that year, he won the Australian Open in late 2014 and he carried that momentum into the following year, where, of course, he won two majors and almost won all four of them in many respects. It was an incredible year for Jordan Spieth, a real breakthrough and one of the best seasons we've ever seen. And in some ways, it began at the Australian Open. So a great history for him there. He loved it down there. He's played well there consistently. He's won it twice. He finished second the other time he played there. So he's looking forward to going back down under and playing at the Australian in Sydney. Some great golf courses down there and always a real great historic event, the Australian Open. And also, like you said there, yes, Chris Riley, of course, won in the PGA Tour in the past. He's also a former Ryder Cup player. He was part of the ill-fated 2004 team under Hal Sutton, where he was one of Tiger's many partners that week. And Chris Riley now is moving on from playing competitive golf. In the next chapter of his life, he's going to be the golf coach at the University of San Diego. And a guy with that experience playing in the Ryder Cup, winning on the PGA Tour, I'm sure the players at the university will value his input and insight and his experience of playing golf at the highest level, Carlos.
And because we never have enough Trump news, Fred is going to talk a little bit about him.
You know, you love it.
We have to bring the newsmakers. So there's Trump, John Daly, Wada Mix. I mean, what more news can we get?
Two of my favorite guys. You know, a couple old friends got together the other day. Big deal about that is one of them's the president of the United States, while the other's a hard drinking, gambling professional golfer by the name of John Daly. They yucked it up at the White House. Boy, I would love to have been in that meeting to hear what was going on. You know, you can just see Donald's like, hey, look at this, John. Come over here. Look what you're doing. I can do this. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. I that would have been great. That would have been absolutely great. It'll be huge. It's going to be huge. We also want to congratulate a very good friend of Back Nine Report, Bill Hughes, who has been the general manager at TPC Sawgrass for 11 years, just received a promotion to regional director of operations for the entire TPC network. So congratulations, Bill Hughes, another Ohio guy, guys, that's done well.
Well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest in the world of golf. Special thanks to Kieran Clark. Incredible. I always am amazed at your knowledge and your great insights. So thank you for being with us one more time.
Thank you, Carlos. Can't wait
to see that open. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. If you missed it, check it out on iTunes or TuneIn or Roku TV. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres along with Kieran Clark and Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Albertsons and Tom Thumb gas rewards are now better than ever. Just shop at Albertsons and Tom Thumb to earn gas reward points. Redeem up to 20 cents off per gallon at participating Chevron or Texaco stations and up to $1 off at Tom Thumb stations. Sign up at Albertsons.com/rewards or TomThumb.com today. Already signed up? Sign into your Albertsons or Tom Thumb app. Maximum gas reward at participating Chevron or Texaco stations is 20 cents per gallon and $1 per gallon at Tom Thumb stations, up to 25 gallons. Other restrictions and exclusions apply. See complete details at Albertsons.com/rewards.